Welcome back again to BadQuaker.com. It's Monday, December 5th, 2011. I'm Ben.
I'm Kai. Hi.
Hello to all of our new radio listeners. It's big, big news. We are now with the Liberty Radio Network.
Woohoo! We're on the radio!
Which is really funny because, as we were reminded by some of our Facebook people,
we may have kind of slightly been a little bit disparaging in our comments regarding radio.
Yeah, we were kind of giving radio a hard time. Grandma, what's a radio? But hey, you know.
But with the recent government censoring of the internet, you know, radio is one of the last free ways to get messages across.
So we are glad to be on the radio with the Liberty Radio Network. Mm-hmm. And we don't know exactly, you know, how that's going to affect us. I assume we're going to continue with the same type of content and everything that our regular listeners have been used to. Although, now that we're on, because we're on satellite radio as well, So we had kind of wandered away from the international stuff, and we were kind of focusing more on U.S. topics, and we kind of lost our international audience. You know, though we lost most of our...
We miss you, South Korea.
This, friends in South Korea might still be listening. They're pretty faithful. I think we lost our Hong Kong audience.
No, Hong Kong, come back.
I think we lost our Australian audience. And we did have a bunch of downloads from Poland recently. And, awesome. And it was audio downloads, too. So,
hi, Poland.
Yeah. Poland is, in many ways, Poland is now freer than the U.S., in the sense that, you know, they were under Soviet control for so long.
Right.
And now... if you compare what it takes to get on an airplane and fly from one location to another in Poland, as opposed to the United States,
right?
Or if you decide to start a business in Poland, you know,
right?
Or if you decide to do pretty much any of the normal activities of life, it's freer in Poland than it is in the U.S. right now.
Yeah.
That's a pretty scary thought. Okay, now, you were traveling in the, is it considered the Deep South?
I don't know. South Carolina, I don't think that's the Deep South.
Yeah,
I think that's
South Carolina is pretty deep.
I think that's the refined, you know,
oh, yeah, that's true. It's it's coastal. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was along the richer plantations and so forth.
Right.
Yeah, so, okay. So the Deep South would be more like Alabama, Georgia, you know, like that.
Yeah. Mississippi.
Yeah. The Delta.
The Delta, yes.
Where all the good food is.
If there, I think if there are alligators there, then it's the Deep South.
Well, I don't know, because Florida, I don't think, even though Florida is the furthest south, I don't think it's technically considered the Deep South.
No.
Culturally
Florida
speaking.
Florida is...
I think most of the South,
Florida.
Most of the South probably doesn't admit to having Florida.
Right? Though I think
and we just
Florida,
lost all our Florida listeners,
by
the
Florida
way.
Florida doesn't admit to having the Deep South either. So I think that
it's
goes
a two-way thing.
Ways.
Well, you get up in the panhandle of Florida, and they relate to the South much
they
better
do,
than the peninsula.
Yes.
It's
A little bit fewer transplants from the North.
So we've completely lost topic, and we're just rambling on for no particular reason. But if you're a new listener...
We do that a lot.
Yeah, yeah. If you're a new listener, this is kind of how the podcast goes. We don't really have any... well, you know, I have concentration problems, so...
we have a tendency to bounce from subject to subject.
See our podcast, the... What was it? The brain damage? we had some podcasts relating to that. It was not the Aardvark podcast, but it was the...
Armadillo.
Armadillo. Yeah, we had the Armadillo podcast, and we had the...
it was originally the Spiders from Mars podcast, but it quickly became the Brain Damage podcast.
Yeah, or the Armadillo, one or the other.
I don't know. Anyway, if you don't know who we are... If you're
good
just
for
tuning
you.
Into the Liberty Radio Network and you have no idea who these crazy ranting people are, you're probably better off.
Yeah. It's kind of deceptive because the podcast name is BadQuaker.com or Bad Quaker Podcast. And so that gives a person either one of two misconceptions. One, that we're about cookies.
Right.
There's no cookies. The other thing is that it's a religious podcast, and it's not a religious podcast. As a matter of fact, we attempt very... cat alert. That's one of the... For all the new folks, we constantly have a cat in the studio, and she constantly tries to disrupt things.
She's very put out that I've taken her off the table.
Yeah. She was headed for the mic. Anyway, anything religiously that we discuss, we make every attempt to not isolate any particular group, whether you're Christian, Jewish, Muslim, atheist,
agnostic. We have a tendency to believe that if something is moral inside the realm of religion, it is also moral outside of the realm of religion. And if it's moral outside of the realm of religion, it's also moral inside the realm of religion. And so when you try to base your life on morals, religion is a good guide, but if something is moral, it is moral universally.
Stefan Molyneux has a really good book about that. I read it in September, I believe, and it's called, and it's about universally preferable behavior, I think, universally preferred behavior or something like that. And he shows very definitely, very scientifically, very, very precisely that an individual's morals are entirely separate from any theological or religious beliefs that they may or may not have. Morals are and
Pat Robertson.
Yeah, Penn Jillette has done some really good discussions on that topic as well. Because really and truly, if you think about all the people in Hollywood, the religious kind and the non-religious kind and the anti-religious kind, it's going to be hard to find anybody with morals better than Penn Jillette.
Right.
So, and he is an atheist. So, but anyway, but we're not pro-atheists either.
Right.
What we are seeking in this podcast is to explore the zero-aggression principle and how it impacts individual lives and society and how it can impact individual lives in society. And to me, as a Quaker, I relate the zero aggression principle to the Golden Rule. And I had an interview with Elizabeth Higgs, and she pointed this out, and it was just, to me, it was just like a light came on. The zero aggression principle and the Golden Rule are kind of like two opposite sides accomplishing the same goal. The zero aggression principle says that you cannot aggress on anyone or their property. And the Golden Rule says, I don't want anybody to aggress upon me or my property, so I will treat other people likewise. So these are two things stated differently, achieving the same moral goal.
And it's interesting because nearly every religion, when you sort of pare it down to that one statement that it tries to achieve, that's it, you know, is don't harm other people. You know, and then it
let's clarify modern successful religions, because some of the ones in the past were more like, no, we have to keep the king alive into immortality by, you know, sacrificing people's hearts while they still live.
Right. But most of those have a tendency, you know, religions can be filtered one way or another, and that is an excellent example of a religion that started out with, you know, we're going to do these rituals so that we get fertile fields, and having a state swoop in and confiscate the religion and saying, no, now all of a sudden this religion is a tool of the state.
This is a good opportunity to go into something that we like to make a very clear distinction between here at BadQuaker.com, and that is the difference between a legitimate government and the state. And whenever I'm writing an article or anything, I always capitalize the S in the state. Now, J.R.R. Tolkien said that it's an insult to capitalize the G in government. It's an insult to the language, because, and I don't have his quote directly in front of me, but but his intent was that the government is not a person, and therefore it shouldn't be capitalized.
Right, it's not a proper name.
And he would know those kind of things, because, you know...
he was the professor.
Yeah, he probably knew more about the English language than at least anybody alive in his day. But I will argue with Tolkien in the sense that my problem is not with the government. Mm-hmm. My problem is with the state. Mm-hmm. And then I make that distinction between the two. I do not capitalize the G in government. I do capitalize the S in state.
Right.
Because even though it's not a person, I believe it to be an entity.
Right.
It is a fantastical entity like Santa Claus.
Right.
Or the boogeyman.
Right.
But it is an entity. And therefore, I capitalize the S in the state. I do not capitalize the G in government, though.
Right.
Now, in explaining the difference between the state and the government, a useful way to do this is if you think of all the things that most people consider that is good that the government does. The government does things like they keep crazy drivers from ramming through your house.
Right.
Well, they don't really keep not that really. From happening. But that's the attempt that they try to do. They try to control traffic flow into a safe manner. They
right.
try to give us good roads. They
right.
try to give us mail service. They try to
give us fire and ambulance.
Yeah, police services. They try to protect us from exterior entities, from other governments and threats of terrorists and whatnot. That's the intent of good government.
Right.
Whether they accomplish each and every one of those goals is a separate issue altogether.
Right.
But that's what government is theoretically supposed to do.
Right.
They're supposed to provide services to people. Okay. What the state does, on the other hand, is the state is we'll look at it in two different ways. The state is that entity which maintains a monopoly of aggressive violence within a geographic area.
Mm-hmm.
So they take a map and they draw a line on that map mm-hmm. and they say within this map, the state is the only one allowed to use aggressive violence.
Right.
That's what the state is. Now the state uses aggressive violence to enforce all those things that the government is supposed to do.
Right.
In order to pay for itself, in order to pay for all of the functioning of the government, the state uses aggressive violence to rob in the form of taxations and levies and all the other ways that the state finances itself. The state uses aggressive violence.
Conscripted force.
Conscription, sure, which is the same as slavery. Folks, we do have a dog, too.
Ah, the joys of being bad Quaker compound.
Yes, we do have a low budget here. High security with Nikki the dog protecting us at all times.
An attack dog. Guard dog.
Yes. Except when
Homeland... Vicious ankle biter.
Except when Homeland Security pulled us over in the motorhome and then she was silently observing. Oh no, ninjas are looking in the windows. Different story for a different podcast. Okay, so...
Anyway, but the point being that the state is not... When you talk about the state, you're not talking about, you know, the United States of America is not the state. The state of Nevada is not the state. You know, we're not talking about states like that.
Right. Let's look at the other way of looking at the state.
Mm-hmm.
The state is an imaginary entity. In other words... The post office is real.
Mm-hmm.
It has a real building.
Mm-hmm.
It has real employees. They gather mail, and people drop off mail there, and they sort the mail, and then they transport the mail, and then they drop off the mail.
Right.
And people are doing these things. And these people who are doing these things are employees of the Postal Service.
Right.
And this is a function in the U.S. This is a function of the government.
Right.
Now, when we think of the Postal Service doing these functions... We imagine in our minds something bigger than the Postal Service, something that gives the Postal Service the authority to act as a monopoly.
Right.
Because the Postal Service has no real competition.
Right.
By law, the Postal Service has no competition. Now, the government allows UPS and FedEx and these other partial carriers to carry and deliver packages of one sort or another. But first-class mail, by law, is only allowed to be... first-class mail is only allowed to be carried by the postal, by the U.S. Postal Service
right.
in the United States. And that monopoly is provided through government law.
Right.
Now, this whole time we're talking about government, but the state is the imaginary entity that gives the government the authority, or the imagined authority, mm-hmm. to, if let's say if UPS decided that they wanted to start delivering mail mm-hmm. rather than just packages, and so they just started offering that service. Mm-hmm. Well, they're not harming anyone in doing that.
Right.
As a matter of fact, they're providing a service for a fee, so they're doing exactly what a person should do in a capitalist society.
Right.
But the state gives people, in their minds, the authority to then pick up a gun mm-hmm. and go down and arrest people at UPS for doing exactly what other people are legally allowed to do.
Right. It's the when you are being pulled over by a policeman, mm-hmm. the policeman is real. He's an actual person.
Right.
He has a real gun. Mm-hmm. But the thought in your head that he has the authority to pull you over,
yeah,
that is the state.
Right.
That mentality of putting him above you as a greater person than you, who mm-hmm. has the authority to order you to do specific things, that's the state.
And there are two sides of this. One is that you believe in the state, mm-hmm. therefore you pull over and you submit to what the cop tells you to do. Mm-hmm. The other thing is the cop believes in the state, mm-hmm. and therefore if you don't pull over and submit to what the cop tells you to do,
right.
he has in his mind and in your mind, but because it's in his mind, he acts on it. Mm-hmm. He has in his mind the belief that he can do things that you can't do
right.
in order to force you.
And other people have this belief as well. So if you're driving down the road and a cop attempts to pull you over mm-hmm. and you don't submit to the state mm-hmm. and so you don't pull over, mm-hmm. and he then decides that the state has empowered him with the ability to kill you for this.
Right.
Other people mm-hmm. who are also under the belief that the state exists and gives him this authority,
right.
side with him. And so society mm-hmm. allows him to get away with this horrific crime.
Right.
Because they have imbibed him with this godly, you know, idea that mm-hmm. he is a figure of the state.
Yeah. Now, let's take it to the Santa Claus thing. Let's just imagine this for Santa Claus. We all know that there's no real Santa Claus.
Mm-hmm. Sorry to anyone who's listening who's like under five. Gotta well, grow up sometime, kiddo.
As you know, and I'll put this, we didn't introduce ourselves properly anyway.
No, we didn't.
Kai is my daughter.
Hello.
I'm Ben Stone, and Kai is my daughter. She is adult. She's has her own life, and she's married and everything like that. And I'm...
I'd like to point out I was an anarchist before him, though.
Yeah. I'm a reformed minarchist. Anyway, where was I going with that? Oh, Christmas. So I never lied to my children once about Christmas. Mm-hmm. I always felt that if I was going to lie to my children, then I would be setting up my children to be believing something and then at some point in time realizing that I had lied to them. Mm-hmm. And if I'll lie to them about Santa Claus, or I'll lie to them about the Easter Bunny, or I'll lie to them about any other imaginary entity, then what will I not lie to them about? Or
right.
what have I told them that is and is not a lie? So I just made the choice from the earliest time, even before my wife and I had children, that I was not going to lie to my kids. And so sometimes that's even to my own harm. I have a particularly sketchy background as far as the law goes, and as far as particular black markets and forbidden substances and so forth.
Like raw milk, right?
Yeah, raw milk is a good example. And I chose from the earliest days that if my children were mature enough and smart enough to ask me a question that was that required an answer, that I would answer that question to the best of my ability as honestly as possible, and I would not use deception, mm-hmm. even if answering that question made me look bad. So, for example, if my children ask me if I've ever stolen anything, I have to tell the truth. I cannot glaze over my past and try to pretend like I'm something I'm not. Because if I make it a policy to begin deceiving my children, then where do you cut that off? Where do you start to say, okay, well, we're gonna just tell the kids this because they're young and we don't know. If they're old enough to ask the question, mm-hmm. then they're old enough to understand the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So now let's take this Santa Claus thing. So if we teach our children that there's a Santa Claus and we really put it in their head that there's a Santa Claus, and when they're asleep at night, we go in and we put things in the house that make it appear as though Santa has visited.
Mm-hmm.
And the cookies that they left out the night before, we eat part of them and we crumble them a little bit and we drink some of the milk and we do the whole routine to convince them there's a Santa Claus. Then their behavior, they're going to behave based on that belief that there is indeed a Santa Claus.
Right. Which just irritates me so much. On a completely separate, aside from the state tangent, there is so much magic and wonder in the real world.
Yeah.
In, you know, going to a farm for Christmas and picking out a Christmas tree and drinking apple cider and doing these really awesome, wonderful seasonal things that I feel like when you make the season for your child all about this fantasy, that you're stealing a real, amazing event that they could be having.
Yeah, because when that lie pops, when that balloon eventually pops, it's just like a balloon popping. It slings out and smacks anything that's nearby.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, all of a sudden you've tainted all these wonderful things about the Christmas holiday and the season, or whatever holiday that it might be, or whatever. And I should mention, going back to the Quaker thing, that Quakers don't acknowledge one day as being any better than any other day anyway. So
and you know, even if your kid is smart enough to know that it's all a facade, because most kids do, you know, they realize that mommy and daddy are putting out the cookies and wrapping the
some
presents.
Point,
and,
at some point, they do.
You know, you're really not going to get away with the charade for very long.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, you look silly.
Yeah.
And the kid feels embarrassed because he doesn't want to tell you that he knows you're doing it.
Yeah.
You know, and
so you get this awkward, which is unnecessary because, again, it's based on deception.
Right.
And deception is not a good thing to have with children.
Right.
Okay, so the state then, let's see if we can bring this back around to the topic. The state then is the belief in something that is not real, that based on those beliefs, people take action.
Right.
So, for instance, let's go back to the government. When the government provides, let's say, let's take it to, well, I was doing the post office. Yeah, let's pursue the post office. So, for example, the postal service is doing a function. They are delivering mail.
Mm-hmm.
They have laws set up so that nobody can compete with them, and only they can do the particular type of mail that they can do.
Mm-hmm.
No other company can behave like they're behaving. There's something within our society that we have collectively agreed to that gives the post office a special place in law that other companies or other individuals lack.
Mm-hmm.
They do not have that special place. And what gives the post office that special magical permission to do what no one else does? That's the state.
Right.
It's not just the government. The post office is the government.
Right.
But it's not just their own authority. It's not that guy that drives up in front of your mailbox with in a little truck with a backwards steering wheel. I'm sorry, folks in Europe, but that's not where the authority comes from.
Most of Europe drives on the right side of the road, don't they?
I don't know. I know England.
I think it's just England that drives on the left side.
So England is the only one that's backwards compared to all the rest of the
world? Well, the United Kingdom. I don't want to single out England. Wales, I'm looking at you, too.
Oh, my. So the post office, then, as a part of the government, is providing a legitimate service, and they're doing a legitimate job, but their authority to act as a monopoly in that, and the authority to use violence and murder if they have to, mm-hmm. to enforce their...
if they want to.
Yeah. Let's keep this in mind. We're talking about the post office. We're not talking about drug dealing. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about international terrorism. We're not talking about spies. We're talking about the post office. But if you set up a post office of your own and you start to compete with the United States Postal Service, here's the sequence of events. You'll get a notice mm-hmm. to cease and desist. You might get a visit by somebody of some pretend authority. That person will probably serve you with some kind of papers. Mm-hmm. If you decide in your mind, this person has no authority, I'm going to continue to run my post office, then more individuals will show up and they will insist you go with them. Mm-hmm. And if you say to them, you're just a person like I'm a person, I'm not harming anybody, I'm running a postal service, then using the authority of the state, they will insist that you go with them and that you stand in front of a very important dignitary mm-hmm. that calls himself a judge, and he will decide whether or not...
And they will break into your business and they will confiscate everything and they will destroy whatever they want.
And if you try to resist them in any way, they will use violence against you mm-hmm. over letters. Mm-hmm. Now I'm using the Postal Service as an example because we're not talking about methamphetamines.
Right.
We're not talking about somebody who's a serial murderer.
Right.
We're not talking about someone who goes out and sets up some kind of Ponzi scheme and rips off people for millions of dollars.
Right.
No, we're talking about a person who legitimately takes mail from one person, charges them a slight fee, and delivers it to another person, mm-hmm. the government, using the force of the state, that imaginary authority that only exists in our minds, the government will send people to your business or to your house, and they will shove a gun in your face, handcuff you, throw you to the ground, shoot your dog if it barks at them, mm-hmm. and don't be... Look at the Cato Institute's study on this. Mm-hmm. Dog murders are like standard operating procedures when the cops come in mm-hmm. full force like that. The first thing they do, they shoot your dog. And it doesn't matter if he's a little 3-pound chihuahua or if it's a 70-pound whatever, mastiff or something. I guess that'd be a skinny mastiff, wouldn't it?
That would be a fairly skinny mastiff, yeah.
But either way, we're talking about the crime of taking a letter from one person, charging them a fee, and delivering it to another person. Mm-hmm. For that crime that is done millions of times a day by the authorized postal service, if you run your own postal service and do that exact same thing, and if you resist having your freedom taken away, resist having them break into your business, and if you resist them hauling you away to a cage, they will kill you mm-hmm. over mail.
And society, because society has developed in its mind the idea that they are holier than the rest of us because they are imbibed with the power of the state, mm-hmm. society will not prosecute them. Society
right.
will not judge them. Society will not scorn them in any way because they have this mystical power that the state has given to them.
So
it's not just government. Mm-hmm. You know, the most people, when you say the state, they think that you're attacking the government.
Right.
And it's not. That the government is one of the channels that the state works through, but it's not the only channel.
Exactly. Let's go into some of the other things that are part of the state. Mm-hmm. When corporations use the violence of the state, they use the authority of the state and laws that the government passed that gives them advantages in the marketplace. And corporations then push all other businesses out of the way so that only a small group of corporations can compete. Mm-hmm. And they use the fist of the state to do that. They use the government regulations and they use all the enforcement tactics of the state. Mm-hmm. Then those corporations are part of the state.
Yep.
When a bank or a series of banks, a cartel of banks, works together to monopolize all control of all money.
I think that is the official
A cartel, yeah. That's what they call themselves. Yeah, the Federal Reserve calls it a cartel, a banking cartel.
Yeah.
They're not even ashamed of the phrase. Yeah. Normally, people think of cartels, they think of some kind of drug smuggling operation.
Yeah.
But that, if you go to the Federal Reserve's website, I'm blending words here. If you go to the Federal Reserve's website, that's the terminology they use.
Right.
The Federal Reserve is a cartel of banking interests. Holy cow.
Yeah.
So when a cartel of banking interests monopolizes the supply of money, and that's what we're talking about,
mm-hmm.
when one group, the Federal Reserve, can decide how many dollars are in existence,
right.
And they can make more whenever they want, and they can give special privileges to one organization over another.
Ruthlessly attack anyone who tries to have a different monetary system?
Yes. For example, there was a company just a couple of years ago that decided to print up essentially commemorative coins that were pure silver with Ron Paul's face on them.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, they used the terminology dollar. Mm-hmm. They called it a Liberty dollar, or they called it a Ron Paul dollar or something. I can't remember what they called it. Now, unfortunately, because they used a word that the government has decided it owns,
right.
Then they use that as an excuse to go and confiscate all that silver and arrest and imprison the people who were putting it out. And they called it counterfeiting. But how can it be counterfeiting if you're producing a coin that doesn't look anything like an American coin or any other country's coin,
right?
And it's got Ron Paul's face on it,
right?
And how can that be counterfeiting? That's like Disney dollars, you know?
Right.
Why are we not arresting the people at Disney for putting out Disney dollars with Mickey Mouse's face on
right.
it?
Right.
But you will arrest the guys for the Ron Paul dollars,
right.
You know? So that's another aspect of the state. The state selectively enforces its own rules, and so.
That's why I get so frustrated with people who are like, oh, well, you know, if you do such and such, the cops can't arrest you.
Mm-hmm.
The cops can do whatever they want.
Yeah. The laws are written in such a way that pretty much anything can be against the law.
Yeah.
And pretty much anything can be okay.
Yeah.
It's all according to how they want to translate it. There's a really good book out, and I'm not going to quote the guy's name who wrote it because I always mess up his name, but it's called Three Felonies a Day.
Mm-hmm.
And he shows very, very concisive in this book that the laws in the United States are written in such a manner that no matter who you are, the odds are you commit about three felons a day just mm-hmm. in your day-to-day functions.
And even if you are doing something and a representative of the state decides that they don't like what you're doing,
mm-hmm.
and they arrest you, hurt you, confiscate your stuff, kill you,
mm-hmm.
and then they're like, oh, turns out you didn't break any laws.
Yeah.
Meh.
Yeah.
You don't get a sorry, mm-hmm. you don't get a, here, let us,
yeah.
you know, give you retribution for that. There's no repercussions for this.
Going back to the Cato Institute, they had, this was probably 3 or 4 years ago, they had a conference where they brought this guy in who was the mayor of this town.
Mm-hmm.
And he has, as the mayor of this town, he was off doing his mayoral duty or whatever. And he had come home, and he, when he got home, there was a package on his doorstep that had been delivered by UPS.
Mm-hmm.
And but he was busy. Because he had just got home, he needed to take his dogs out for a walk. You know, because people who have inside dogs understand that dogs have a schedule, and
right.
and whatever's in the package is beside the point. So as he came up to the door, he basically pushed the package inside the house, grabbed the dogs, and went off for a walk. When he came back, the SWAT team had forcibly entered, had taken his elderly mother-in-law, and threw her to the ground. Now I'm going to mess up the story because somehow, maybe it was after he got home. Maybe it was after he entered the house because they shot his dogs,
right.
as I was mentioning a minute ago. As soon as they come in, it's like, I think they were like golden retrievers or something, which, come on, has there ever been a violent golden retriever? You know, that's like a violent butterfly.
He licked me to death.
Yeah. But if I recall, it was two golden retrievers, and they shot them as soon as they came in. They threw the elderly mother-in-law. I think, as a matter of fact, I think he had brought the dogs in, and he went upstairs to take a shower or something like that, and that's when they came in. And what it turned out was that the DEA had been following this package through UPS because it was contained marijuana. Mm-hmm. And the UPS driver was in on the deal. And he realized he was being trailed, and so he just dumped it on a doorstep and went on.
Right.
And so they did this whole operation, destroyed this man's front door, came in, shot his dogs, and when they figured the whole thing out, it was all a mistake. They literally refused to apologize to the man.
Yeah.
Even through all that, and even the fact that he was a mayor, they could have looked it up. They could have just checked his address.
Right.
Whose house is this? But no, instead of that, they went in violently with their full SWAT team, guns out, shoot the dogs, throw the old lady to the floor, mm-hmm. cuff her. And this went on. I mean, they were in the house for hours because mm-hmm. they don't just come in and then say, oops, sorry.
Right. Right.
Anyway, so it's the state. The state is that entity that we believe in that gives people the authority to behave in ways that no one would ever accept them behaving if right. it weren't for our belief in the state.
Right.
So then the little kid who gets up in the middle of the night and comes downstairs and pulls on Daddy's pant leg and wakes him as he's sitting there watching TV late at night and says, Daddy, Daddy, when will Santa Claus get here? She's doing that behavior based on her belief that there is a Santa Claus.
Right.
If she didn't believe there would be a Santa Claus, she wouldn't have done that.
Right.
Well, if those SWAT members didn't believe they had the authority of the state,
yep.
they would not felt comfortable in just busting into someone's house, murdering their dog, throwing an old lady to the ground, cuffing her, treating her like she's a criminal. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't have done those things. They would have done something sensible.
Right.
So for instance, now let's take this whole difference between state and government. Let's,
like, you know, knocking on the door.
Yeah.
Saying, hey, did you get a package? Hey, we're going to need to take the package. But that's a difficult concept. I know. It's yeah. hard.
Think of the difference between how Andy Griffith might... Was that his name? No, yeah. He was Andy Taylor in the TV show.
In the TV show, yeah.
Yeah, in Mayberry... what was the name of that TV show?
The Andy Griffith Show, wasn't it?
I think so. That's the confusion in my mind now. Why would they not, you know... Okay. Seinfeld's show was named Seinfeld, and his name was Seinfeld, and in the show his name was Seinfeld. It's very simple. It's easy for a person like me to understand. But these all complicated issues. Anyway, in the TV show, if you think about how Sheriff Andy handled things, that's kind of how a government should handle things.
Right.
But if you think about how Barney's tendency, Barney believed in the state.
Right.
Barney constantly wanted to enforce the fact that he was employed by the state. Mm-hmm. And all the authority that Barney believed he had, that none of the other residents of Mayberry believed in, mm-hmm. that imaginary authority was what motivated Barney to behave the way that he behaved.
Yep.
Now, right now, there's people in Poland going, what is that Mayberry? But... but now we take this to a different situation. We say, okay, it's my original situation, the mail. So if there's no state making this make-believe idea that the U.S. Postal Service has the authority to do something no one else can do,
right?
If there is no belief in that nonsense, then all of a sudden we understand that if it's okay for this group of people that calls itself the United States Postal Service, if it's okay for them to pick up a letter from the house, mm-hmm. charge a fee, carry that letter, deliver it to another house, if we understand there's nothing morally wrong with that, and if we don't believe in an imaginary entity called the state mm-hmm. that makes silly laws that say when one person behaves in a certain way, it's moral, but when another person behaves in the exact same way, it's immoral.
Right.
And we must punish that. When we don't believe in that, and we realize that there's nothing morally wrong with picking up a letter, charging a person a fee, and then delivering the letter, then you have the United States Postal Service doing that activity. And you have Bob's Postal Service, who can compete side by side and do the same activity.
Right. And that, I think, is something that, you know, it's kind of a fundamental thing. When you're an anarchist, people say, oh, how could we live without government? Mm-hmm. Well, it's not the issue.
Right.
I'm not saying I'm against the United States Postal Service.
Right.
I'm not saying I'm against the, you know, the roads or any of those people who are doing a job to make a service.
Or what we might call peace officers.
Right.
Or what we might call defensive forces.
Right. I'm not against any of those things. I'm against the inherent belief that some magical quality of those people makes them have the ability to forcibly put their will on other people.
Exactly.
That's what I'm against.
So then, going back to the Postal Service, is it moral to pick up and deliver letters, whatever. Is it moral? Of course it's moral. Is it moral to do this and charge and make a business out of it? Of course it's moral.
Right.
How do we know that it's moral? Because no one's harmed.
Right.
And all the activity is voluntary.
Right.
If no one is harmed and the activity is voluntary, then it's moral.
Right.
And you can take that simple rule and apply it to anything in the human experience. Is it moral to pick an apple off of a tree? Well, do you own the tree? If you don't own the tree, then you're taking someone else's property. Now we have a moral issue.
Do you have permission to take the
apple? Are you forcing someone to give you the apple off of their tree?
Mm-hmm.
If you're taking the apple from someone else's tree based on the fact that they know that if you don't give them the apple, then you're going to come to their house with people with guns and haul them away and stick them in a cage.
Right.
That's immoral.
Right.
Of course that's immoral. If there's a guy living down the street and he has a nice house and he has a nice little yard and there's an apple tree in that yard and you go up and you say, Mr. Johnson, can I have an apple? And he's like, sure, son, have an apple. There's nothing immoral about that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go to your neighbor across the street and you and five or six other of your neighbors go to Mr. Johnson's house and tell him, Mr. Johnson, we're going to need some of your apples.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, what are you talking about? Well, if you don't give us one of your apples off your tree, just one. Now, you've got thousands of apples. If you don't give us one of your apples off your tree, then we're going to form a committee and they're going to come here and they're going to confiscate your apple tree.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're going to do this or they're going to do that. And if you resist, they're going to arrest you. And if mm-hmm. you resist, they will shoot you.
Mm-hmm. And even if you don't make it that much of a threat, if you mm-hmm. say, you know, well, if you don't give us an apple, you mm-hmm. know, fires happen.
Yeah, stuff happens.
You know, and I, you see this all the time with school levies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they say, well, you know, if you don't pass this levy and give us money,
mm-hmm.
we may not be able to keep whatever program's important to your school.
Yeah, for example, we might have to drop off all the bus service, which is going to mean every single person that's going to school is going to have to be driven to school by their parents, which is going to snarl traffic in your little town. It's going to cost you an extra half an hour to get to work every morning. How about that?
Yeah.
How about if you pass the levy now?
And you know, you can say, oh, well, they aren't using force or they aren't mm-hmm. using violence, but they're using the threat
mm-hmm.
of force and violence.
And intimidation.
Right.
And ultimately, if you say, even if all through that, you say, no, I'm not going to pay this levy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have children. I've never had children. I'm never going to have children. I don't have any use for the school.
Mm-hmm. My children don't go to that school.
Yeah, or I paid for my children to have private school.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to pay for this school levy for you guys to have, you know, extra set of cameras for your football team or mm-hmm. whatever. If you refuse to pay it, they will come to your house
mm-hmm.
and they will confiscate your property.
Mm-hmm.
And if you resist, they will shoot you. That's what the state does.
I've had conversations with people and they say, oh, you're being dramatic. They don't do that. They'll just garnish your bank account.
So taken from you.
They are confiscating your property.
But what if you resist them taking your bank account?
Yeah. You know, you don't do anything through your bank account. You mm-hmm. do everything through cash.
Or what if the bank decides to stand up for your property rights and the bank decides to protect your money? They will send people down and arrest the individuals at the bank. So that's what the state is. Now we say, well, how could we get these things done without the state?
Right.
How would we have the school buses without the state? How would we have this without the state? Well, here's the thing of it. The state, as we've already determined, is an imaginary entity that exists in our minds. Mm-hmm. The people who do stuff like actually carry the letter and put it in the box, mm-hmm. or sort the letters, or drive the truck to here or there, those are individual people.
Right.
And
those
they're doing
exist.
Yeah, they exist. They're people. The actual police officer, the actual soldier, the actual whatever that the service is, they're people. And if there's a need for a service, let's say roads, or let's say postal service, or let's say air traffic control, mm-hmm. if there's a need for that, then people will naturally look at other people to fill that need.
Mm-hmm.
And in a free market situation, if there is a need, then that means people will pay for it.
Right.
And if they won't pay for it, they don't want it.
Right.
So if people want roads, they will pay for roads.
Mm-hmm.
And if people want school service, they will pay for school service. And you say, well, what about the people who are too poor to afford that? Well, some people are not going to be able to afford that.
Right.
But guess what? A good portion of Americans don't pay taxes now.
Right.
So and yet they still drive on the roads, and they still get have mail service.
Yep.
even if they don't mail a letter and buy a stamp, they still have free mail service.
Mm-hmm.
So this is called the free rider argument. Well, we can't have this because you'll have free riders. You'll have these people who will get, let's use security for an example. Let's say they're private police, private security, private, I hate to use the word police, but let's say security. They're private security individuals.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a community gets together and they say, you know what, within these two neighborhoods, we want to hire security services.
Mm-hmm.
So they figure out what the cost is for this community, and they get bids. And so four or five different security services make bids, and they choose one security service. Now, that one security service realizes that if they give bad service, they're going to get fired.
Right.
And each individual's...
There's, incentive...
Yeah. Yeah.
...for them to do good.
And each individual peace officer understands that if he does a bad job,
mm-hmm.
he's going to get fired.
Mm-hmm.
So you have this incentive to do a good job. So then the community, together, wants to hire this security service. Now, what if there's one guy, one ratchety old man, who's like, I don't need your security. I'll take care of my own. Well, fine. Take care of your own.
Right.
But the free rider argument is that because the community around him provides security, he's safe because of that.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. But we have that now.
Right.
That's what we have now.
Right. And actually, that brings up a great point because, people say all the time, well, how do you enforce these behaviors?
Mm-hmm.
And how you enforce them is the same way that society enforces any behavior that it wishes to enforce, which is everyone in the town now knows that Mr. Crotchety old man didn't want to pay up for security.
Yeah. So when his house gets broke into, so
right.
what? Should have paid up for the security.
But, that is how society forms good
mm-hmm.
Procedures for the rest of society.
And also, let's say the old man who doesn't want to pay for security, his insurance company that says, wait a minute, you don't have security on your house? Well, we're going to have to charge you an extra 14%
mm-hmm.
on your homeowner's policy.
Yep.
Because we're not going to insure your house for damages if you don't have security.
Right.
And so what's he going to do? Is he going to not have insurance on his home?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we choose to have insurance on our home.
Right.
We do that because things happen.
Right.
Stuff takes place.
Right.
Sometimes a meteor comes through your roof, or sometimes a car misses a curve.
Right.
These things happen. So we voluntarily decide that we're going to have insurance.
Right.
And so if a person doesn't have insurance, then they take that risk, and they understand that they take that risk.
And I think I brought this up on another podcast. I was reading a book that was written in... I want to say the late 1800s. I'm not sure. Maybe the 1900s. It's the Anne of Green Gables series.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's talking about this small community in Prince Edward Island, Canada. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about, you know, they reference a couple of times, you know, oh, well, we need to put a new roof on this, you know, community building, or
right.
we need to put a road, or we need to do all of this. And they go take collections.
Yeah.
And there are people in the town who don't give.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody knows it,
yeah.
you know.
Now, the argument that always
comes it's
up,
not, you know, they don't say, oh, well, you're not allowed in the community.
Right.
You're not allowed to use our road. They
mm-hmm.
don't do that.
Yeah.
It's just that
everybody
you're
knows that
standing in the community. And, you know, now maybe Mr. Johnson, who runs the, you know, general store,
mm-hmm.
maybe he's not as inclined to give you as good of a break as he gives
mm-hmm.
everybody else, because he knows that you don't really care about the community that
yeah.
much.
Yeah.
You know.
There are these pressures. The community can do a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
The state can do one thing. They can bring violence upon you.
Mm-hmm.
Community has a variety of tools that it can use to pressure people to behave in according to community standards.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to use a different example when you were talking about... Oh, I know what I was going to say. One of the arguments that always comes up at a moment like this is, well, you don't have any examples of where this has ever worked in the past. Well, actually, the truth is opposite of that.
Right.
The state...
We don't have any examples of a state that has functioned.
Yeah, that works. That ever didn't collapse of its own way.
Right.
That ever...
Didn't turn horribly oppressive.
Yeah.
Didn't... murder millions and millions of people. There's no evidence that the state works.
Yeah, the state always progresses towards more and more tyranny.
Mm-hmm.
This is Robert Higgs in his book Against the Leviathan, I think, where he talked about the ratchet mechanism and or the ratchet effect, where the state constantly ratchets up its... It may draw back some, but it'll
mm-hmm.
never draw back as much as what it advances towards tyranny.
Mm-hmm.
And every excuse it gets, it ratchets that up again. And it constantly gets worse and worse and worse to the point of where it becomes intolerable.
Yep.
And then the people have to kick it out and there's a revolution. They start all over again. But that effect always takes place in state,
mm-hmm.
When you have a state. Now, so do we have examples of where a government, where voluntary governments, that's what we're talking about, voluntarism, where government is voluntary, where there's competitive government, do we have any examples of where this has taken place in the past? And the answer is, most of human history has existed outside of the state. Most of human history was voluntary.
You know all those bits that don't have detailed history?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's because they don't have a state.
History itself, typically, is a recording of the glories and the wars and the activities of the state.
Mm-hmm.
That's mostly what is recorded as history. You think back about history. Okay, what was going on in 64 AD? Well, in 64 AD, Jerusalem was being sacked by the Roman armies.
Right.
That's one state being conquered by another state.
Right.
But what was happening at the time in Ireland?
Right.
We don't know. Why do we not know? No history was written. Why was no history written? Because there was no state.
Right.
Yet there were people there. They were functioning. They were buying. They were selling. They were trading. They were raising things. They were functioning in every way without walled cities, without armies. They had roads. They had communications. They had art. They had music.
Mm-hmm.
They had all the things of society of their day, including money and all the other things that the people in Rome had, except they didn't have massive armies and they didn't have walled cities.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't have a state. And what about the people at that same point in time in central Russia?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there were people there, but there's no history of it.
Right.
Why is there no history? Because there was no state. There were no walled cities. There were no massed armies. There was no taxation. There were no wars. Because there was no state.
Right.
And so since there was no taxation and walled cities and armies and wars, there was no history.
Right.
Nothing was written down.
I mean, history isn't... Nobody has history books of stuff that didn't happen.
Yeah.
You
the
know?
Other day, something totally mundane took place.
Yeah. Nobody... a brief history of the Irish people pre... Well, they got up and they went to work and they had disputes with their neighbors and they raised their sheep and nobody is writing those history books.
Right.
Because they're boring.
And to prove they're boring.
That's why you when you read novels, when mm-hmm. you read fiction,
yeah.
nobody ever goes to the bathroom in a novel.
Yeah. Or nobody sits around and does nothing for hours
right.
and hours at a time.
You know?
Here's the thing. Murray Rothbard wrote a whole article, a whole thing on the history of Ireland from the time that the Christian monks began moving into Ireland around 5-600 AD.
Mm-hmm.
And until the English invaded Ireland under Cromwell,
mm-hmm.
that entire time there was no state in Ireland.
Right.
Now, a lot of fantastical lies of history have been written about Irish kings that did this and that, but they had to lie to accomplish this.
Mm-hmm.
When you read Murray's, first off, Murray Rothbard lays down all of the references so everything he does is fully documented, so it's not just some fantastical story.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing of it is, it's boring. And the reason it's boring
is because nothing happened.
Is because the Irish people did not form big armies, they did not form big walled cities, they did not go attack their neighbors, they did not conquer anybody, they did not have taxation, they did not do any of these things. And it was so unusual that the monks had left different places in Europe, fleeing the turmoil in the fall of Rome, and they went to Ireland specifically because it was peaceful.
Right.
And so they get to Ireland, and there's no government that they recognized.
Mm-hmm.
There was government, but they didn't recognize it
because
they were looking for
the state.
Yeah. So without the state, they didn't realize that government was all around them.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't see it as being there. So the monks are like, "What is with these people? Are weird?" And so you go back and read what these monks wrote about a culture that they had no understanding of.
Mm-hmm.
And now the monks were susceptible to attack.
Right.
And so the monks had to. If you've ever seen those Irish, it almost looks like a silo. It's
mm-hmm.
a straight cylinder, straight up. And the monks would hide in these things, and they'd have a door really high up on the side of it so that they could pull the ladder up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the reason that they were under threat of attack was because they were not really part of Irish society.
Right.
They were not protected by the government, by the protective systems
right.
that existed in Ireland. And that's what it was. It was a system of clans that all functioned among each other. And so if, O'Reilly over here stole your pig, then you didn't go to a policeman and have the policeman go and beat up O'Reilly
mm-hmm.
and, you know, well, no, yeah, I'll go into that different. No, what you did was, you know what clan he's a part of.
Right.
My mind works like that, folks. You know what clan he's a part of. So you go to your clan member and you say, "O'Reilly stole my pig." And your representative in your clan goes over to them and says, "O'Reilly stole his pig." And there was a matter of honor there to say, "Well, did he steal the pig?"
Mm-hmm.
And then they would settle the issue. And you would get paid for the pig, whether O'Reilly was ever punished or not.
Right.
Because it doesn't matter now. The only thing that matters is that you lost a pig.
Right.
So you get a pig in return no matter what. And then that clan has to deal with O'Reilly, whether or not they take the pig from him or whether they let him keep the pig or whatever has to take place.
Yep.
And this is all Murray goes through and lays this all out how it worked. The problem is, like we were saying, it's boring.
Right.
Because without the fanciful tales of great kings and knights in shining armor and conquest and all the things that go with the state, there's just not that much to write about.
Right.
So how do you write and make things sound interesting when you say, "Well, you know, everything functions pretty much normal all
right.
the time, and we get along"?
That's, you know, that's one of the very first things that I point out to people who, you know, because you start off the conversation with, "Well, you know, what kind of politics do you believe in?" And you say, "Oh, well, I'm an anarcho-capitalist."
Mm-hmm.
And they say, "Well, anarchy... there can't be anarchy." And you say, well, you engage in anarchy every single day.
Mm.
And it's true. It's absolutely true. You know, I engaged in anarchy this morning when I decided what I wanted to wear.
Mm-hmm.
I engaged in anarchy when I decided what I wanted to eat for breakfast. I engaged in anarchy when we decide what car we want to buy. All of these things are anarchy.
But we need to wrap it up because we're hitting our hard limit on time. But let me throw this out. This is something I always like to bring up. And that is Stone family reunions that happen in eastern Kentucky, in Appalachia. Deep in Appalachia, Stone family reunions. We're far out in the county. We're literally an hour, hour and a half away. If someone was to call the sheriff, because there is no police out there.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone was to call the sheriff, you could expect him to show up. If it's an absolute emergency,
mm-hmm.
you could expect him to show up in an hour or two, right? If it's not an absolute emergency and you call the sheriff, he'll try to get there in the next week or so.
Right.
Now, Appalachia is not, you know, the heart of the Amazon. It's not totally, there are roads and everything. But this is just the culture that's there. Okay, so here we are. A whole group of these Stones meet in Appalachia, and there might be 50, 75, 100 of them. And some of them hate each other.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them barely tolerate each other. Some of them love each other. And we all get together, and there's no hard rule.
Mm-hmm.
You not like there's a cop there checking you in to make sure you're not armed, to make sure you're carrying your allotted amount of, macaroni and cheese or something. Yeah. And yet, there's always an abundance of food. There's always more food than is consumed.
Mm-hmm.
Half the people there are always armed, but no one knows it.
Right.
There is alcohol involved, and yet there are people there who are teetotalers who absolutely religiously will not touch alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And they all get along. And and all the years that we've had these family reunions, there's never been a single fight. There's never been a single gun brandished. There's never been a single act of violence in any way that couldn't be settled right there on the spot with people saying,
mm-hmm.
you know, Bob, settle down, have another beer.
Right.
Okay, that's anarchy.
Right, and that's normal. And I think when we get to this idea, and I know we have to wrap this up, but when we get, especially in this 24/7 news culture
mm-hmm.
and this highly policed state that we are in, we get to this idea that violence and crime and force and aggression, these are all normal. But the fact of the matter is, it's not.
Yes, no.
You know, no. I've never shot anyone. I don't know anyone who's ever shot anyone.
Soap operas are fake, folks.
Yeah.
And when the soap opera is given to you by Fox News or CNN, it's still fake.
Yeah.
It's fake.
So anyway.
Folks, thanks a lot for listening to BadQuaker.com podcast. Be sure and get over to BadQuaker.com and check out the website. If you have any questions or comments, mail to me, Ben, B-E-N, at BadQuaker.com, or Kai, K-I, at BadQuaker.com. If you have a problem with the website, BadQuaker at BadQuaker.com. Thanks a lot for listening, folks.